So, what's up? Today, which episode is it, Wing? Mosaic Podcast number 7. So today we are joined by Jacob. So I always pronounce your name wrong. Is it Jacob or Jakub or?
It's Jakub.
Jakub.
Jakub. Like with, you know, sound B. Jakub.
Jakub Kamar.
Yeah, and the surname is very difficult, so you can just...
No, let me try.
It's Jakub Kaczmar.
Jakub Kaczmar.
Yeah, it's kind of there. Yeah.
All right, so today we're joined by Jakub Kaczmar.
Yeah.
The founder at Veracity Protocol.
Correct.
And you co-founded several companies, right? As I can see, OneProof and Stellar Bolt.
Yes.
And you were the partner of Chief of Product at... I'm trying to pronounce it, ArtStack, right?
Yes.
And you were freelance before, and you were the user experience director at VNEC, right?
Vignette. Yes.
Interactive. And lead user experience at Fifth Play.
Yes.
So what did you, I mean, what did you study? Like, you know, in, because like when I look at LinkedIn just now, right? I saw like, self-education for blockchain, for user experience,
yeah,
and for, so did you have like a formal you know, higher education, like bachelor and master?
I did
social psychology, right?
Yeah, I did. So you know, how to frame this, I have my master's.
Yeah,
it's in marketing communication. To sum it up, you know, the only thing I learned about after 5 years of studying marketing is like basically three basic rules, you know, do something amazing, tell stories about how you are doing it, and support other people sharing those stories.
You mean branding, right? When you say marketing? Or it's different?
Branding, marketing, that's like everything together. I chose the marketing path because, you know, it was very easy to study. My parents wanted me to do university, you know, I wanted to have university life, but also wanted to have enough space for work, because that time I was already, you know, freelancing quite a lot.
Yeah.
And that was a perfect, you know, perfect way and combination how to do it that
and,
time.
And how about UI UX? Like, I've seen you doing a lot of UI UX.
Yeah. So basically the journey was like, since I was 15 years old, yeah, I started to do, you know, websites, and later on, you know, more complicated websites and web products and services. And I started to do mobile apps. And basically, even though I was programming in the beginning, later on, I was just focusing on the user interface and user experience and really like putting the whole vision together. So I had a client with an idea, and I was the one being able to, you know, materialize it into something tangible.
You learned it by yourself.
Yes. Like, yeah, I learned it by myself.
By the way, he's an UI UX guy as well.
Nice.
Yeah, he studies like industrial, right? Industrial. Yeah. UI UX.
And the way I learned it was always, you know, kind of daring. To give you example, you know, I was starting with as a UI designer in Photoshop doing websites.
Yeah.
I decided to, you know, write a book about designing websites in Photoshop. It was the first one in the Czech Republic at that time. I was like,
wow,
17 when I did it. And I did it only because I saw, you know, one guy in Slovakia doing a book, which sucked. And I was like, I can do better right now. And my friends were like, yes, so then do it, you know? And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And that was basically a point where I was decided like, okay, I really need to learn with Photoshop properly, even when I already signed for the book. So that way, you know, I went into...
When you say Photoshop, you mean Adobe, right? Adobe Photoshop.
Adobe Photoshop, yeah.
Man, that's tough, man. I tried once with Adobe Premiere. It took me like almost a year, like 6 months to a year, man.
I really loved it. And that like book deal really made me to, you know, push myself into it and take it seriously, right? And so I finished the book. It was selling really great. And actually 10 years after, I was finding it at universities as like studying material, which made me very sad because like, why do they use such old books, you know, to study? There's so much better stuff now. These things get outdated very fast. But it started landing me a lot of great jobs. That's really where my career, you know, took off. And now I started to do big projects in Czech Republic and later on also in abroad, where I was then lucky to meet, you know, a bunch of like media reporters and like new media designers, which were a combination of war reporters and, you know, new media developers. And we start building projects for, you know, UNICEF and World Bank and Amnesty International, and doing projects in Israel, you know, for companies in media.
How old were you
around the world? I was like 21, I think, 22. And before that,
I was still in school doing nothing. I was 21.
And before that, you were asking about the UX career, right?
Yeah.
So there was like the same story with the book, you know. The UX started to be like the buzzword, right?
Yeah.
That time. And I was already designing websites and stuff. And I saw this opportunity with the company Fifth Play. They were looking, basically the company approached me that they are looking for developers to outsource to them, but yeah, part of the deal is to have a UX designer.
Yeah.
And if I would like to be part of the, you know, selection. And I didn't even knew what it actually means, but I said, of course, I'm UX designer, you know, let's go for it. And I just learned everything, you know, in the week prior. It kind of clicked with what I was already doing. So it was just another way of looking at
things. I'm looking at Fifth Play right now, helps leading brands turn homes and other buildings into smart living and working spaces.
They still exist, that's great. They were doing cool stuff at the time. They were doing smart cities and integrations and, like, you know, where you have like all your gas meters and electricity. It was a big company.
Okay.
And you had all the meters, all the appliances, everything was interconnected into one dashboard, including like city services for truly smart integrated city. It was like really amazing idea. I just think they were way too early, you know, with that. The tech and society was not ready.
But who inspired you to, like, you know, go into the market? Marketing, the world of marketing and UI UX, like, do you have like a bunch of friends that,
it was,
you know, like
really
to do?
It was really,
or you
just
realize that, like, you are different, know, like when you're 15
it's,
and you
it's
want
a
to do
normal
something
it's like, you know, you start to do something like websites, it's a hobby, right? Hobby turns into something people start paying you for, and then it turns into something, you know, you actually do, right?
But most people can't find a hobby, right? I mean, like, for most of our friends or my friends as well, like, they can't find that thing they want to.
It's something, you know, you need to find in it you love. Like, for me, it was probably like the perfectionism in it, you know, and being able to put things together, right? And like, also, you know, I like to be challenged by environment, right? You were meeting with a lot of clients, which were, you know, company representatives, right? And you were like 17, 18 year old with, you know, acne on your face, right? And they didn't take you serious until they start seeing, you know, your approach to work and the outputs, right? And I like that as well. And so, you know, and I love the work, and it was just then expanding and taking me, you know, to ways where the whole industry was developing, right?
Do you ever like go back to your high school and like give a speech and, you know?
Yeah, I did that multiple times. Yeah.
Did you inspire anyone?
Many people
like come to you like, hey man, I want to start up, and
many people like, that's something I'm most proud of, that actually there were people writing me like, you know, your presentation or your book, really, that was why start of my career, or it inspired me to, you know, do this freelance job. Because I also did a lot of talks about, like, for young people, that it's not just being employed and starting a company, there's a middle path. And you can be independent professional, and you need to learn specific skills and thinking to be able to do it. Like, you know, what's your price, how to approach this, how to do basic contracts and negotiation, right?
Yeah.
How to find like what you can do. And also, I was dealing with the bullshit of, you know, finding your passion stuff, right? Passion doesn't come until you have a certain mastery in the thing you are doing. So you just need to experiment. I was always
you mean
thinking,
like trying different paths,
yeah,
right?
If and you don't know, just do as much things as possible, so at least you know what not to do, right? And it will lead you somewhere. And it was exactly what I was doing. I was like always saying, you know, I have a fear as a guiding mechanism here. Whatever I'm more afraid of, like, is it giving a talk, you know, or doing this big project?
Yeah.
That's usually like indicator of that something you should be doing. There's this great book, War of Art, not Art of War, that's, you know, but War of Art from Steven Pressfield, about like this inner force which is always working against us, you know.
Yeah.
It's always why we don't do that thing we always wanted to do, and I will recommend reading it.
So, like, what if you felt like so many times in things that you are passionate about? Would you like keep trying, or would you try a different path?
Sorry, say again.
I mean, you let's say you're passionate about startup, right? But you failed so many times, and would you try again, or would you go to a different path? But let's say I want to be a venture capital, right?
Yeah.
And I failed so many times. I don't have a degree, but shall I just keep trying, or shall I give up, try a different path? Like,
I guess
sometimes people get into the wrong path, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's this like one of the other stupid like recommendations, like, you know, fail your way through, right?
Yeah.
That's like, again, very limited. You need to have like failures in which you exactly knew what was your, you know, hypothesis, right? What went wrong, what you can improve, right?
Yeah.
That then you can grow in certain direction. If you have this, you will eventually get there. It's just a matter of, you know, time. And then it's of course a question of your skill and talent, right? You can always build your skill. If you have extra talent, that's the extra 20% that matters, right? That makes things easier or puts you into like a top tier. If you don't have it, it's just harder work. You may never be in the top, but, you know, still you can manage. So you just keep pushing.
Cool. So back to your company, Veracity Protocol. It's a super, super cool company. Graduate from TechStars.
Yeah.
So is that in Denver, Boulder, or?
It's
or Silicon Valley. It's strange. Like, I don't know why TechStars has their headquarters in like in the middle of the state.
I don't know.
You know, instead of like in the Bay Area.
Actually, I think Boulder is very interesting space for, you know, a lot of companies, but I don't really have much information, so no more comments on that. But we did TechStars in New York. It was one of the major programs. Otherwise, TechStars is doing accelerators all around the world. And that was mostly the beginning of our like path and forming what Veracity Protocol really is about these days. And one of the most important like events really in my career as well.
So Veracity Protocol, which you use computer vision and camera to identify the characteristic of physical items,
mm-hmm.
In a digital way, and you put it on a digital ledger. Could you explain more, like how did you find, like, started this company, and how did you find your co-founders? How did you get to like prototype? It was a very tough journey, and all the way to TechStar, and now you got invested by Intel Capital. That was a long, long way, right?
Yeah. There was, so in the beginning, it was mostly the journey with my other co-founder, Roman, who we met like almost 6 years ago. He was starting ArtStack, which was the startup for art, to trade artworks without physically touching them, with, you know, automated market valuation based on data sets. A lot of
cool things. You mean trade online?
Yes, okay. A lot of cool
things. So it's a platform, like e-commerce platform for art.
Exactly, exactly. A lot of cool things that time, a lot of like innovations. And he's like a Renaissance man, you know, older guy, extremely experienced, like with experience in variety of areas, which seemingly wouldn't connect until it clicks. And in that moment, you know, then it's the amazing part. And he was looking for someone to put his vision together, to materialize it, which was my job back then, right? That's how we met. And I was like, you know, let's do it. Let's definitely start. So as we were building this, you know, 2 years in, we found the whole issue of counterfeits in artwork and how major it really is, how it's a problem for people to trust, you know, if they rent their artwork for exhibition, yeah. Is it the same thing when it comes back, since it's so easy to do super fake, you know, and so on and so on. So we were looking at all the solutions out there, like, you know, RFID chips, DNA markers, diamond dust, you know, crazy things.
And
we basically saw they all suck, you know, it's like, it's invasive, it's embedded security elements, you know, they can be removed, cloned, tampered with, you need special hardware, you need to be expert, it's super expensive. And for most of the artworks, they won't allow you to embed anything into it, right? And some solutions were solving it with, you know, certificate on a blockchain, or, you know, or ownership on the blockchain.
Yeah.
But there's no connection between the blockchain entry and the art, physical piece of artwork, right?
Yeah.
Which has actually the value.
Yeah.
So what's the point then, since that can be replaced? So we were thinking there has to be easier way to do this, considering, you know, the artwork itself has a unique material structure down to a level of details, same as a human fingerprint. You cannot really replicate that surface down to a level of, you know, microns. It's impossible. So why not, you know, fingerprint that and use that as a way
how did you find out, like, that idea, you know?
So that's like how we work with Roman, you know. Roman is more like a visionary, a strategist. Like, he has the idea like somewhere there. He sends you like a bunch of ideas, some of them great, some of them stupid. But, you know, he can feel that, certainly. And then I came in and did like in-depth analysis of all the applications and technologies there, you know, really did a deep dive into it, right? Because I'm a geek.
So you guys would talk about a lot of crazy stuff, right? About technologies, about, you know, visionaries and...
Yeah.
That's fun. That's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, we had this huge spreadsheet, and it starts showing clearly, you know, what's the path to go. So we formed the hypothesis. We contacted several universities. At one, we met Camille, which is now our CTO and co-founder, and like guy who is our always introducing as our Steve Wozniak. Yeah. And who was like, okay, give me some data, I'll run some experiments, you know, let's see. So, you know, we created the first data set, we saw it's working, and
but it was not easy to find, right? Like, when you have to like think of which university to go for and like, which guy and which lab, right? That, I mean,
and it's such work, such a big difference. At one university, it was like, you know, how would I describe, like, you know, opening an old drawer at your grandma's, you know, and there's this tinge of old air, and, you know, I feel like it's super, and they didn't get the idea at all, and they were kind of laughing at it and looking at the piece of, you know, sweatshirt under a microscope and telling me like that's not possible, you know. And then in Brno at the Technological University, they had the proper approach, like, yeah, anything is possible. We need some data. We need to run some tests.
Do they have the IP or like it's something that create?
No. They don't have the IP. We have the IP for that.
Okay.
And the university is very like entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And so they like their students to cooperate with companies. So that's like the platform we work with. Until now, we are deeply connected with them. We use some of their resources, you know.
Yeah.
Their computer vision professor is our advisor. Is part also of the founding team, and so it's a very deeply connected relationship. And yeah, and since then we formed the company. It was that time it was called One Proof. We were focusing on art. I'm you know, these days I'm always saying like
it's a completely new company, right? It's not like that art company. it's like
it was a new company, exactly. Okay. New company just with this solution for art world, which would also solve the art stack problem, right? Yeah. So it was like that was the idea. And now I'm saying, like, you know, art market is a perfect trap for solutions like this.
Yeah.
Because it seems obvious, like perfect art market fit, right? There's an issue, it's a big market, you know, big price tags of artworks. But when you actually get out there and start, you know, trying to get there, you'll see, you know, people like to keep things shady. The artworks that doesn't really move that much and that often, you know, it's very innovation resistant space.
Yeah.
And it's just bleeding you dry and you're losing time. We literally lost like a year and a half because of that. And then thanks to our investors, Tensor Ventures, who invest in the company with a vision of beyond art world, and we start working
on
pilots.
That's a VC
in Czech Republic. Yeah, deep tech VC in Czech Republic, and we start doing pilots on black boxes in airspace and on, you know, in semiconductor space and on security IDs and paperworks.
Yeah,
and start seeing the solution is generally applicable and works on much more interesting use cases. We start playing with the blockchain part as well, because we saw this as really solving the Oracle issue for blockchain, you know, how to connect physical to digital.
Yeah.
And that was when we formed Veracity Protocol and, you know, put everything together in order to enter Techstars, because for Techstars we had to have, you know, our stuff together and be really ready and organized and structured, and that really pushed us to get into that stage, and we've been accepted, and that 3 months has been, you know, really
it's
like
pretty intense.
Intense,
like hell,
you know,
right?
I was feeling like a punching bag, and you know, you're just hoping you'll get out on the other end in the right form and shape that it will.
So we will go deep into Techstars. I got a lot. I'm pretty curious about the Techstars program. But you know, back to Veracity, like, how long does it take to build the first like MVP or even prototype to, you know, for customer? A beta version
right now or before?
Before, when you started this company.
Like the first version of algorithm took us years, you know, to put together to something really applicable, because there's more difficult part to it, right? One is to do the verification based on, you know, computer vision. Another thing is to work around a different environment, different light, different angles, different cameras, different materials. That's much a harder part.
Yeah.
And that's what took most of the work. But once we got into that shape, we were faster and faster in deploying and showing a solution. So it went from, you know, 5 months, 3 months to a month to 2 weeks to instant. With
how big were your team when you guys formed that startup company? Was that like just you and Raman,
like,
right?
Five guys.
Five guys.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's super tough to find a co-founder, right? Because, you know, I saw a lot of entrepreneurs here in Taiwan. You know, they have like so much difficulties in finding co-founders. You know, one person that could don't take salary or take little pay and get equity in the company, which you don't know if it's gonna go big.
For us, it was like from friendships and relationship existing. So like with Roman, I was already working, right? With Camille, we started already with one proof. That was the way how we, you know, learned about each other. Then we had another co-founder, Marvin, with whom I was working intensively before and for some time in Dubai as well, and we knew each other for a very long time. So we weren't really in that stage, oh, we should find a co-founder and, you know, how to do it.
Did you get like funding from your family, like angels, or you start from that VC in Czech Republic?
No, initially we were funding it from our own pockets and like, you know, really friends and family, you know, some angels here and there. It was tough. And
this is what I worry the most about startup, right? Like, you just gotta get money from your family, you know. If I mean, we don't have deep pocket, right? We gotta like borrow from our uncles or like parents, and that's risky, right? You know, how are you gonna return all those money?
No, honestly, I'll give you an example. Like, you know, when I was independent contractor. I was making really a lot of money.
When you were 15 years old?
No, it was like, you know, 22, 23. Somewhere around that. And I was very comfortable, you know, I didn't have to work much. I had very high hour rate, you know, was making a lot of money. But then I entered the startup world, right? And I thought I have the entrepreneurial mindset that I can form and manage teams, since I was leading teams and working with designers and developers before, yeah. You know, and that I can run a startup and be a head of product initially, and that all crushed, you know. It's like very different reality then, and that's where Roman you know, the
took over.
The co-founder really helped me, because he has been a mentor to me since, and through his like tremendous experience was really guiding me through these processes, you know. And also seeing...
Are you guys from the same generation, or he's much older than you?
He's like 55 now. Yeah, oh. So I could be his son, basically.
It's like broken eye, right?
So that was really the most critical relationship, because like the part where, you know, I suddenly realized that my income would get to one fifth, right? And that I would be working crazy amounts of hours with unsure future, that I will have to cut all the ties, all the clients and relationships, you know. That's a big thing, you know, you always need something to start again if one thing fails, and if you leave them cut, it will just deteriorate, right? It's harder to get back. And there was a huge ego battle inside me later.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, do you ever like fight him, you know, like in a meeting, and you know, you have different opinions, and you just...
No, yeah, we had like, such, you know, a crazy heated conversations many times.
And yeah. Sometimes, like, you know, I saw that from, I don't know how to pronounce that, Anderson Horowitz, right? I don't quite remember. It's a huge VC in the Bay Area. He said, like, sometimes they oppose or against someone's idea just because they want to go against it, you know, just purpose to... make everyone more competitive, right?
To
get things better, you know.
Exactly.
So, you know, you have much ego at the time. I think it must be quite difficult for
exactly.
to work with, you know, the startup, right?
Yeah, so. I guess, but that's like also linked, I would say, to startup mentality, that you are able to question things and be open-minded. Without this, you cannot really build companies and try new things, right? So you need to turn it inwards as well. And, you know, and always be like, maybe I'm wrong, you know, maybe I am the reason why, you know, this happened. Or, and maybe, you know, let's say that he's actually right. Let's explore this for a moment, you know. And this ability is then, I would say it's critical, right? And otherwise you just, you know, you would punch each other in the face.
Yeah. And do you have that moment, like, let's cool down and go back to your room and have a bottle of red wine and just chill and think about, like, what happened today, you know?
Yeah,
what
and
has
that
gone
gives
wrong,
you, if it reaches that point, which it didn't for a very long time, but it did before, then it's a very good thing to do, and then you just saw how silly it was or how stupid you were on both sides, so.
Yeah, cool, man. So back to Techstars, you know, we are always curious about, you know, things happen at Techstars, like one of the largest accelerators in the world. So how did you apply Techstars? I know that it's like they only accept not more than 1% of the applicants. So do you have to like send a deck, or you have to write a proposal, 100 pages, things like that? How does that work?
Hopefully I'll remember it correctly, because you know, in startup timeline, that's like eons ago. And even though it was last year, which is crazy, I feel like 10 years older already. But initially it was through a connection, through one of our advisors, who introduced us to one of the MDs who was running the program, a managing director.
Okay.
And he basically met with me in Prague. I just introduced him the concept, the general idea, right? And that kind of started the process where it was series of calls, right? And putting materials together, but mostly calls. Techstars is not really that much interested in your company and your startup idea and in the technology itself. It's more interested in the founders.
Oh, really? Okay.
And how they work, who they are, what's their background, how they, you know, put it together, how they react to things, you know? Because they know from
experience.
That's
the first thing they look at, right? And then the second priority would be to look at the technology.
Yeah. Because okay. They know from experience, you know, that many startups during the Techstars program will pivot many times. Their startups, you beyond recognition, they completely change direction.
Yeah,
so they
yeah.
they
like
select
yeah.
they select and invest really into the founders, not really in the technology in the back, which of course is an important part of it, but yeah. not as much. And then the process was, you know, series of calls where, you know, I was having very late calls because of the time differences. I was in Taiwan actually most of the time.
And why?
you usually
you
spend,
weren't married, right?
At the time. Not yet, but usually I like to spend winter in Taiwan. You know,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's best weather to be here, like in South, you know. But it's for another discussion.
It's a little off topic, but if I walk on the street in, in Prague, right, and I say Taiwan, I mean, do the people there know like where's Taiwan, and do they?
Yeah, I would say years ago, no, they would probably like just recite what, you know.
Is it China?
Chinese government is saying yeah, Taiwan is part of China.
Yeah.
But propaganda. these days they would know because there has been a lot of press coverage of, you know, Taiwan-China Czech Republic relationship. There has been with the Prague mayor.
I know. We just like get MOU, right? Or like sister city.
With
Taipei mayor.
There's a lot of actual, you know, reality, and also Czech people through the history and through the oppression of, you know, communism regime,
yeah,
they can see through all the bullshit, you know, and all these things, and they.
So Czech was communist.
Yeah,
country
until 89. Yeah.
So it's like East or East Europe, right? Most of East Europe countries.
Exactly.
Were,
was part of the Soviet Union.
Russia is Soviet Union.
Yeah. So, you know, that legacy leaves you like an ability to really look into things as they are. So, you know, they like Taiwan. People now know, you know, Taiwan actually invests more money than China in Czech Republic.
Oh, I didn't know. So,
which is
like
interesting information.
Manufacturing to set up like factory in China.
In most of, I don't know the details. I just know the figure is bigger than what China invests, because China made a lot of promises which they didn't deliver on, and then they, you know, threatened the head of Senate for him not to go to Taiwan for a visit.
Yeah, I know.
Which actually was connected to his death. Because he was very old guy, it was very stressful for him, and his family was basically linking that event as, you know, to
mean, got
death.
So much pressure from Beijing, right?
Yes, yeah. And also from, you know, part of the Czech government, which is very, very pro Beijing. So also all this media, you know, coverage around that subject made Czechs more aware. So I think these days, if you go through the streets and ask about Taiwan, people will be like, oh, you know, we know Taiwan, great country, thanks for the masks, you know, and
So it's like, you know, from a political point of view, Germany and corporations in Germany is working very close with like China, right? So they don't talk like publicly bad things about China.
Yeah.
But how about Czech Republic, right? You guys got, you know, all the big corporates and you know, people like you, all the government officers or, you know, member of parliament. Like, would you talk publicly about the relation between China and Taiwan? And do you see Taiwan as a country?
Of course I see Taiwan as a country, right? That would be against the most like inner values of Czechs and Czech Republic when they look at what democracy is and how hard is it to get, you know, from the history to say, you know, that Taiwan is not a democratic country. That would be against, you know, everything I stand for and like the Czechs in the history stand for. So that's definitely that part. And look, for China, I always like distinguish two things. One is China is a country and people, which I think is amazing, and the Chinese Communist Party, you know, which is very, very different thing.
So I think, you know, they are growing so rapidly in the past 10 years, right? So, I mean, maybe that was the reason, because they don't have democracy. They can move things very quick. You know, if it's like in Taiwan, then, you know, you have the opposition party and you have the current government. Things just move very, very slow. So that's what I think. It's like Singapore as well, right? You know, you only got one party control the whole country. Yeah, so back to Techstars. We are talking too much about other things. We don't want it to be political today. So, yeah, so what was your plan, you know, if you don't get accepted by Techstars at the time? Do you want to, like, go after some market in Southeast Asia, Asia,
or no,
like
actually,
in,
you know,
US or Europe?
I think we would just die if we wouldn't get accepted. It would be the end of the road. Yeah, really. It was like, you know, we were pulling it for a long time. We
you
were,
you like, mean
like
running
our,
out of cash?
Yeah, we were burning. Like, we were actually... We already, I think that time, I may be incorrect, but there were two times where we already ran out of money and we were just, you know, working for free and everyone was working for free and like really pushing, you know, pushing through. Then you just got used to it when it was the third.
You're
time.
Like Elon Musk, you know, he doesn't take salary. Yeah. Not until recently, he got a big compensation, like it's like 70 or 300 million. Yeah, so like YC, right? Techstars, you know, super, super intense. So how do you fit into that culture? I mean, were you a very intense kind of person when you were in Czech Republic? And I know like in the States, right, you have, you're seeing all other startups as well in the same program. It would be so competitive, right? Like everyone's fighting and, you know, I want the mentors, I want these mentors. Like, how do you feel?
So it wasn't competitive at all.
Wow.
That was a great, you know, there was a great atmosphere of friendship and support between the teams and between everyone.
Yeah.
There were no like fights about resources. And it would be stupid. There were so much resources, you know, to work with. Everyone got
too much.
There was too much to handle, actually. And the biggest issue we had was, you know, not enough time, not enough energy, and cognitive overload of options, right? And that's where, you know, the advisor steps in and the Techstars steps in to teach you, to educate you, to guide you through it, you know, to help you and to push you really hard in order to, you know, to shape you and to get you into the position, you know, where you should be at specific point of a time. Just through their sheer experience of from previous programs, where they know like what they need to do, what the startups struggle with, you know, and what will happen if they don't push you, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, so it was like, and to your previous question, like I, you know, I always thought, you know, you're young, right, and you're thinking like can do so much and, you know, work long hours and like really bulldozer through anything.
Yeah.
But there I really was hitting my limits, you know. Everyone in the team hit their limits at a certain point, you know, where, you know, you would just come to our house, which was this crazy cheap Airbnb in New Jersey, which with colorful walls, you know, which was giving you a headache just, you know, being in it. And you would come there, you would see us like just screaming at each other, you know, at 2 a.m. and because we couldn't decide on priorities, because everything is a priority, right? And everyone has exhaust, you know.
But
screaming.
How? I mean, do you guys vote on priorities or everyone has their own priorities?
Well, we eventually set up in the rhythm where every evening we decompress from the day. We say what was good, what was bad, what we think needs to be done, and we just then talk through it. And then Roman was usually the one who was
Roman was in the States as well.
Yeah.
How many people were there?
Five in total, and two changed. So
what was the deal? Like, does Techstars have to pay for all your living expenses?
They
or...
give you 20k, at least for the program. They did gave us 20k US dollars to, you know, basically cover our expenses.
Does that relate to any equity at Veracity Protocol, your company?
Yeah, they take equity. They basically take equity. You get into the program, they give you 20k, they give you a convertible note option if you want to take it for I think 100 something, which you know, you something you take if you are desperate, and that's
20k it. For each person.
No, in total.
For 3 months.
Yeah. So it
that's
kind
not
of
much though,
it
right?
just covered our of course we used our own money to be there.
Like, I mean, for rental, for food, for transportation.
I basically just till now was still like kind of repaying the debt since that time.
Wow. Do you guys live together?
Yeah,
like,
we lived together. Or? Yeah, we had a house, you know.
Wow, cool, man.
Yeah. It's crazy times.
So like when you got accepted by the program and you know they flew you to the States, so what was the first thing you did with Techstars? Would they like put a lot of, I mean, how does that process look like? Would they give you sort of like, is it compulsory to finish all the KPIs that they mm-hmm. would give to you, or it is non-compulsory that you can do everything, they just throw all the resources at you?
So they have a structure for the whole 3 months that yeah. you know they really push you to follow, but they don't really like get that much involved that they would be telling you what to do, yeah. right? They really push you to find your own way. And basically the first month is where, you know, you came with your beautiful idea, which then gets smashed with all these waves of advisors. So you have like mentor mixers where, you know, there's 70 mentors. And you have like 2 weeks and every day you meet like 6 people, which are like amazing experience, you know, advisors from big company or big startup or, you know, yeah. fintech or whatever. And you have to explain them in 20 minutes, you know, who you are, what you do, why is it amazing, how they can help you.
For how many days, you know?
That was the first whole month, basically. Wow. So that was amazingly hard to do because for everyone you needed to research, prepare, do that, then follow up.
So let's say like for the first day, right, you met those advisors and the next day you have to curate your idea slightly or
no,
you just pitch
something. No, you need to be done. There's another wave coming. So
okay.
There's no time to even fart in between, you know, and during that time you need to still, you know, run the company, any project
business
you may have,
and,
you know yeah. every other things just don't stop there, right? So and this is really just that first month to make sure what you have is something actual valuable, right?
So you do have like existing business when you are at Techstar program.
We still were mostly
have, like, business
we
in
had
Czech
some
Republic
POCs
or...
right, but okay. it wasn't like we would have a business yet. And the first month is really about that you are able to express what the startup is, you know, we are able to pitch it and you are able to get feedback.
Every day, like for the first month, every day?
Yeah, almost every day, basically. And and if it's not that, then it's like education. There's like people coming in giving, you know, presentations and stuff, and you need to work on some materials and things to prepare. Then the second month is basically building. You build whatever you are set to build, you know, is it a prototype?
But you already have a prototype, right? So you just
yeah.
tweak it or like...
But for wherever you are in the stage, there's a certain goal, you know, to get in some shape, right? Usually from the first month, you get so much feedback, you get really crushed that everything needs to change, right? You are changing everything after that. Enough, there's no like stone, you know, unturned. And so that really takes a lot of time. And then the last month is about, in that second month, you have set KPIs, you said you need to follow through. If it's like, you know, qualified leads or, you know, pilots or, you know, LOI signed, whatever you set, they will help you to set it up. And, you know, you then follow with it, including.
So you set all the KPIs in the second month.
Yeah, including, you know, fundraising goals and stuff like that, right? And they teach you to send investor updates every week to all the mentors and interested investors and, you know, team and family.
That's how you got connected with Intel, right? Intel Capital.
Intel, that was before that, actually.
Okay.
That was through our investors.
Okay.
So that was pre-Techstars.
Okay.
Techstars led us to many other different connections. And the last month is preparation for the demo day, where that's like the pinnacle, right? Where, you know, you have 5 minutes on stage to concisely present why anyone should invest in your company and why is it going to change the world, right? And ideally present something, some achievement, something big you managed during the Techstars. For us, that was a strategic partnership signed with NFL for like sports memorabilia and collectibles. And yeah, and it was like, in a nutshell, the structure of the program.
Would they provide you like very structured spreadsheet and their own system, you know, for the whole
program? You have like one-on-ones, you know, weekly, sometimes even more often. So they really check on your progress and where you are with everything to make sure, you know, you're not falling behind.
So is everything set like for the whole timeline? Like from day to day, or you have to like schedule like during office hours,
there's day
right?
to day. There's like crazy calendar, you know, where there's like this lecture, the mentor mixer, you know, the one-on-ones. The...
What if you don't go? I mean, what if you just like, you know?
That's the fun part. So, you know, many times it happened like, you know, we just like, we had to say no to Techstars. We cannot follow up with your program because we are here to run a business, right?
Yeah.
And we need to like do what we think is important. And there was always a heated conversation, but not heated because it would be from their position, like you have to follow our program, right?
Yeah.
But more like really going deeply why, you know, what is really important and why, and, you know, trying to, of course, help us, but also push us into the schedule because they knew once we would start sliding behind,
yeah.
we wouldn't be ready. And if we wouldn't be ready, we would fail the program at the end.
But is that against the agreement or contract like you have with Techstars if we don't attend any of
like
the,
if
the
they
curriculum?
See you are not ready, you they won't allow you to go for demo day, which is fair.
Oh,
you know, so it's kind
that
of
is
like
smart.
Yeah, it is smart.
So
but honestly, they help even if you are totally, you know, you totally miss everything. Your presentation is horrible. You know, it doesn't make sense at all. They have associates.
Another 3 months.
They have associates in program, which were three amazing people, four amazing people, which were helping startups with
yeah.
everything. And, you know, they just like jump on you, you know, kneel on your head and until and help you really to put it together.
So
no,
do they focus,
no matter if you want or not.
Yeah, so do they focus a lot on like curriculum or workshops, or do they provide you any assistance when you're building the prototype?
Yeah, plenty. You get like so much resources to work with. The advisors,
immediately or
yeah,
you have to push?
The
or?
Techstars associates, you know, that's like suddenly you have basically four new employees you can allocate work to, which are extremely experienced in what they do. We actually end up hiring one during the program.
Would they find POC for you?
Huh?
Like POC opportunity with corporates?
Through the...
during the program.
That was our work to do through their network and advisors.
And you pitch
so
yourself
and
sell
yourself,
right?
So they were like an open book,
right?
You know, these are the resources, these are the things you can do. Here's how you can work with it and like, you know, go with it. So, you know, they open the door for you, you need to walk through, right?
So you have to send a cold email to those corporates or...
Yeah,
you
usually
have a
work
way,
like, you know, you spoke to one of the person and he was like, oh, I can introduce you to this and that, right? So you did a follow-up
yeah.
and that's like how, you know, you were going through it. And that was like crucial, you know, for, and even 10 times more crucial for a startup which is not US-based. So when you are from Europe, and you know, everything, and you want to business develop and get investment in US, it's all about being there actually in person, right? And meeting with the people and having people setting you up for meetings and recommending, like even with our technology, right? Which everyone was said, wow, it's that's super cool and amazing.
Yeah.
If you don't see it in person, it's still kind of, you know, sounds too good to be true.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
like whatever.
Yeah.
You know, some weird guys from Czech, you know, something shady. So that's like huge difference. So I really always say I cannot recommend Techstars enough, and 10 times more for if you're not US-based startup.
I think YC is pretty much the same, right?
Probably. I have no experience there, so can't comment, but I would guess so, yeah.
So have you met any person in the States that you would be like, wow, like when I saw Bill Gates, when I saw Elon Musk, or like someone that wow you, you know? No, as a mentor, you know, you met
it was
a lot,
basically
like,
every second day, you know. And part of the funny problem was like, you know, there was always more amazing person and you were always like wowed and like, oh, we should already assign this person as our lead mentor, or we should like have him as advisor. But then later on you find someone even better,
even
which
better.
Fits like even like, you know, more in there, right?
Yeah.
So it's also hard like not to get to how to say.
Did you get anyone on your board right now, like as an advisor?
Yeah, we have advisors from Techstars Mentor. Actually, many mentors invested in the company.
So does he have to take like equity at a company to be the advisor, or it is from Techstars?
Usually an advisor takes equity, but that's always about, you know, the kind of relationship you agree to, of course.
Cool. So how does the mentorship program work? Is it like on demand? Like you just... they just give you the list and you just pick
one schedule.
They
prepare a specific like curated list of like it was something like 60 to 70 mentors.
Yeah.
Which then you meet during the program.
So what makes you like stay up so late at night, like, you know, during the Techstars program? Is it because you have to like finish, like, you know, investor, right? You gotta curate, like you gotta have different decks for.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I still have tremendous respect for some of the other teams in the Techstars where like one person show. I still do not understand how they were managed to do. For us, it was five people at the time. Sometimes we were three, but most of the program we were like four or five. And we were still not managing, right? And so everyone had their area of work.
Yeah.
And for me, during the night, it was like, you know, writing emails, doing follow-ups.
Yeah.
You know, every advisor you needed to write a follow-up, you know, to thank them, to say what you learned, to list, you know, next steps of connections and things you would like them to, you know, to help you with, to follow on to everything, you know, the previous ones started, to follow on all the business engagements, because during the Techstars we were meeting companies, we were meeting investors, right? We were still working on the product, we were doing tons of things during that. Even on the personal notes, you know, the team members were having babies, you know, I was proposing my wife in
at a time when
you
were
time.
Yeah. Oh wow, how did you manage that, man?
So it was crazy.
In the States, I mean, were your
no,
wife?
No, honestly,
in
I think if I haven't like proposed during the Techstars, I think she would already had enough of my, you know, startup adventures.
Yeah.
So it was like
you did it at the right time,
huh?
You did it at the right time.
Yeah, yeah.
So she was with you. She was with you in the States.
It was a long time where, you know, she was like taking all that pain. I was taking,
man.
Right? And it wasn't easy for her as well. But at least, you know, you're with someone who can...
Did that go well?
Take,
like,
take,
you know, when you proposed?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was a great day.
Wow. I was impressed. Yeah, so, like... because like we know some of the accelerators here in Taiwan that would hire agent to work on the deck for each startups, which I think is not what we really want to do, which I not think is right. So is that something Techstars is doing, like they would hire agent and give you advice, you know? But you, by the way, you got a very good deck, you know. I like your deck, your slides.
Oh, really?
And yeah.
Thanks.
It looks very, very good. Super good.
So many experience and iterations in it, you know. It's not like we are good with decks, it's just there's so much pain and time behind all the previous versions. It's just the reality.
Who designed the deck, you or
no? That's Albert, our team member.
So,
he's very talented.
So would they give you advice like Techstars, like graphically? Because we
saw
a lot of startups in Taiwan, very bad slides,
yeah,
and it's not like graphically good. So like how would they give you that advice? Yeah,
I agree with like with bad visual presentation communication that in eyes of investors is, you know, many points down, right?
Yeah,
because you are not able to present clearly and nicely to businesses as well. So it's critical, and even more in US, right? The standard there is higher. And Techstars had people as well to help you with specifically decks and design. They had all the key areas, you know, market research, UI, decks, help with communication and stuff. So
like, you know, it's a huge budget for Techstars, you know, to get all those mentors and to get all those connections. And I know they are working with more than 100 corporations worldwide. So do you have a chance to like meet with all the corporates at Techstars? Like just tell them like who you want to meet and they will just connect, or?
There's always, Techstars always had an approach like, give us a list and we'll see what we can do. You know, there's always someone who's connected to someone. So that was always a way we could get somewhere.
Cool.
Because, you know, and also simple things, all the advisors, Techstars people you had on LinkedIn, it started piling up and you saw who's connected where,
Do you fight the managing director? Do you fight like advisor, like mentors at Techstars? Because it's your own business after all, right? Like you got to take control of your own business. So do you...
We never really had fight. No, that's not. And Yossi, who was managing director, was like so amazing and experienced, and he had like a natural respect. You just really didn't want to piss him off. and there was never any ego in it. It was very, rational. So it was always on that level.
Is it easy to do fundraising in the States, like better than Czech Republic or in Asia, Taiwan?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't know much about, Asia, Taiwan. They have that much experience here.
It's pretty hard.
I have some in tough. Singapore, in Europe, obviously, and US. And, in Europe, the funds are smaller, the valuations are expected lower, the mentality is different, so it is very different.
Cool. So last thing, back to Taiwan and Czech Republic, like how long have you been here since COVID-19? It's been 4 months or?
I think since November, if I don't count trip to US in March, just before
it's been eight
it
months,
started.
Like 8 months, right? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Eight.
I guess I'm not counting. Yeah.
How do you think about the culture here, like food, compared
already,
with
yeah,
Czech Republic, like you got 7-Eleven here, right?
I love it. There's
and
like
transportation.
A point,
it's a small city. And
I always laugh about there's this point at the street where we live now, where if you...
Ximending, right?
Huh?
You told me you live in Ximending, right?
Yeah, yeah, close by. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you stand at a certain point by the street, you can see 4 7-Elevens.
Everywhere, man.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's like for me, I just love Taiwan. The way how people, treat me, how everyone is friendly and respectful.
Have you been to China?
Huh?
Have you been to China?
No, I haven't been. So I can't compare. Like in Czech Republic, everyone is like a little bit grumpy and always expect something bad happening from the other people. It's not that Czechs would be like, that bad, but it's just
what do you speak in
heritage.
Czech Republic?
Huh?
What do you speak in Czech Republic? Is it a Czech?
Yeah, Czech language. Yeah.
Can you say something like "I love you"? How do you say "I love you"?
Já tě miluju.
Sorry, what was that?
Miluju tě. Miluju.
Man, that's tougher than German,
It's like Polish is said to be a bit tougher than Czech, so. And Polish is one of the most tough languages to learn.
How about you are pretty or you are gorgeous? Like when you talk to girls, like how would you say?
Si krásna.
What does that mean?
You're pretty.
See crass now.
Yeah, but you don't usually say it like that.
You don't say that in the bar.
Depends on your style,
Yeah, so back to Taiwan, Like, do you enjoy like night market and all the food
no, of
here?
Of course, yeah. I love the
food
culture.
Like, because our managing director, he's from Germany, and you know, he told me a lot about German food. He likes that so much, and he doesn't like the food here in Taiwan. It's such a huge cultural difference. Like, but how about Czech Republic? Is it like closer to, like culturally closer to Taiwan, or?
I would say actually, Czech Republic is so similar to Taiwan in so many ways. You know, there's the history of the repression, similar. You know, the kind of national like resurgence and path towards democracy.
Every country does, right?
But you know, if you really look in the history of Czech Republic and compare it to Taiwan, there's many similarities, even in like the how people are here, and in Czech is very similar. If you talk with Czech people, you find like, you know, there's a lot of common things and like mentality, but otherwise, of course, the food is very different. The many cultural things are very
different. Do you get used to it, like the food here?
Yeah,
like
I
know it. I know foreigners, they don't like hot pot. They hate hot pot, man. They hate it so much. Like, I know some Americans.
I like it, but I was always thinking, like, you know, if
it
I
doesn't
to,
make sense to
cook it,
it doesn't
do
make
I
sense to
it?
Put your foot into, you know, just to boil it. It doesn't make sense for foreigners.
But it's
you know?
A great example of the culture thing, right? Then, like, you spend time with someone, cooking food, you know, and eating from the same thing, and it's like the.
What do you like the best here? Fruit, food.
For I'm a big on dumplings, so Ding Tai Fung is my you know.
He's a big fan of dumplings. He has dumpling every
it's
day.
It's my
man.
Church, you know.
Why I don't get it, man. Like all the foreigners like dumplings, you know. I know Moscow has very similar things like dumplings and Paris as well. I just don't know why.
Yeah, I
enjoy dumplings, but not like super like huge fan.
I don't know. What I'm not fan of is, you know, organs and all this stuff. It's like
you don't like organs, right? Like,
I just can't.
How about you know, you got all the like beef noodle, like pork rice.
Yeah.
How about those?
No, I love them. Yeah, I'm a big ramen person as well, which is of
but
course
ramen's from
not
Japan,
Taiwanese.
Right?
Yeah.
Ramen is from Japan, right?
Thing is, like, you can get kind of everything around, except a good pizza and Italian food. That's something I would miss. I don't really miss Czech food. Czech food is, you know,
cold,
very, very heavy. It puts you to sleep, you know. Like, I miss goulash, you know, and svíčková is like a typical national food, but you just have it once in 2 months and, you know, you're done with it.
How about personality, like Taiwan and Czech Republic? Is it even close? Like, how about the education there in Czech Republic? Like in Taiwan, you like your parents would ask you to get higher education, like bachelor, and then to master degree and go to TSMC for work, you know. But how does that work?
I would say it's probably similar, minus, you know, the Asian mentality of like, you know, post school, you know, preparation and all the crazy, like fill your day with things to do and learn and hobbies. But otherwise I wouldn't say that.
But when you meet your wife's parent, well, you would have a lot of different things in terms of cultures.
Not really, actually. It was very like pleasant, and they spend as a family a lot of time in Europe. My wife's dad was working in Netherlands, so you know, and they travel tons, so they are like not your typical Taiwanese family, you know, which would be traditional and like,
yeah,
could get problematic.
Yeah. So yeah, before we, you know, wrap it up, so you're married now, right? You know, to your wife in Taiwanese. So would you move to Taiwan, like in the future?
No, I really feel
you will go back to Czech Republic, or you will go to States.
Look, I don't feel
what's your plan, you know?
I don't feel about Taiwan like this way moving. It's already my second home, you know. It's like very close to me, same as, you know, Czech. So I like spending time between Czech Republic and Taiwan as well.
So
like,
we'll fly
like
forth and back between Czech
favorite places, yeah. And more I travel abroad, more I appreciate, you know, both countries actually.
Where's your headquarters right now? Is it in US or is
I would, most of the team is in Czech Republic. We have some people in US, you know, I'm in Taiwan, some even in Germany. So we're a very distributed remote company.
Do you plan to like incorporate in Taiwan?
Maybe, yeah. Right now we are starting to put together contracts here. So if it would make sense, we would maybe create a subsidiary here.
Cool. Look forward to it. Thanks for coming, Jacob.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, not Jacob again. Jakub, right? Or
Jakub.
Jakub.
Yeah, but Jacob.
Cherema. Jakub Cherema. Right.
Kaçmaz.
All right. Thank you for coming. Have a good day.